Hi everyone, I'm Wert Ahmed.
I'm Abdul Majid.
Welcome to Smashy Business Show. Today it's the 24th of December. It's Christmas Eve. Christmas Eve today, and to everyone celebrating, happy Christmas. I wish you all such a beautiful, beautiful holiday. How are you doing today, Majid?
I'm good. I woke up very early and went for my parking test. So.
Yeah?
Yeah. Failed the battle parking test, but yeah, everything else is fine. Passed all of the others. But I've realized that taking a license in Dubai, it's not, they don't teach you how to drive a car. They teach you life lessons. That whenever you
fail.
Yeah, just fail and get up. Fail and get up and try again. Fail, get up and try again. Keep trying till you get it. That's the life lesson I've learned.
I will keep that in mind when I start mine. Yeah.
It's a life lesson. Everything in life will give you lessons. You just have to find them.
Yeah. So for today's topics, we have three topics, and they're really hot topics. You guys are going to love them. So number one, Honda and Nissan have just announced that they are going to merge by 2026. And it is actually estimated that if Mitsubishi joins, this merge is going to be worth $58 billion. And secondly, it's being reported that the UAE holds $40 billion in Bitcoin. So we're going to tell you if that's true or not. And finally, Affinity Partners, which is led by Kushner, who is the son-in-law of Donald Trump, has just received $1.5 billion investment from Qatar Investment Authority and Lunate. So we have really, really big topics today. But just to, just to make the conversation more human, Majid. I was thinking about something this weekend. I was talking to one of my friends, and they were asking me, they were like, what's your motivation for making money? And I just looked at them, I'm like, why does that matter?
Because basically,
I was just on this tangent of how, I will not rest until I have, I've acquired a really good amount of wealth. I'm being serious with
you.
I will not rest until I've acquired a very big amount of wealth. I will not reveal how much, but I will actually not rest. And they looked at me, they're like, okay, that's a bit much, but why is that your aim? And I'm like, why does that matter? Like, who cares? They're like, no, it does matter. You need to have an aim behind it. You need to know why you're going to do something. But do you agree with this, Majid? Does there need to be some big aim, some big purpose behind wanting to make a lot of wealth? I don't think there needs to be some big purpose.
Big purpose, maybe helping people in the longer run, creating an NGO or a Melinda Gates Foundation
That's
type
how
of
you
thing.
Think about wealth.
Yeah, if I have enough wealth that I'm taking care of for the next, whatever life I have left, and I have enough for my kids and my family, at least one or two generations.
Yeah.
Or maybe a family office. And then I can obviously start helping people. It's not that difficult, to be honest, to think of a bigger goal if you have money. But yeah, when you're en route, getting that money, you don't think about anything else apart from, if I have money, I'll do this. If I have money, I'll do this. But as soon as, I guess, you reach that point, you listen to the richest people on the planet, they will say this, that when they reach that point, they realize that this was not a goal. This was just a step.
Oh.
That they reached, and then they realized, okay, this is now. Now what? I reached my this billion mark. I reached my trillion mark. Now what? So, to be honest, in this case, I liked Elon Musk a lot. He's so passionate. He doesn't care. He has $4 billion of
wealth. He's the richest man in the world.
$4 billion of wealth. He's still getting more and more. I'm sure 100% as soon as the Department of Government Efficiency comes into play, after the new year and Trump becomes president, his Tesla shares, all those things will go up.
Yeah.
So most probably he's going to be the first trillionaire in the world. But he doesn't stop at all.
But this is what I mean, Majid. And that's why, this brings me back to my reasoning for why I want to acquire such a large amount of wealth. I have such an inborn passion and hate for control. I really do. I hate control. It's have you ever, that feeling of when you have a client, and that client, you and them are discussing a deadline you're discussing a deadline to do what? A service that they need.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, you need the money, but they also need the service.
Yeah.
And then you tell that client, you're like, okay, can we please do so-and-so? by this day. The day comes, like, the days keep going, and they don't come to you until the last second. Mm. And it's like, you end up doing it because in your mind, you're like, okay, I want my money. But it's that factor that I hate. I hate that factor of control, of being played like a fiddle. I hate it. No, I seriously hate it. I hate the control. And so for me, that's why in my mind, like, what I aspire to have is it's a level of wealth where nobody can control me in that way and control my time. Because time is money. Time is everything. And what I've noticed is that people play with your time when... Do you understand what I mean?
I'll tell you what. I saw this movie. I don't know if you've seen it. Mark Wahlberg. The movie is Gambler or something. It's a very underrated movie. A lot of people didn't see it.
Mark Gambler.
Yeah, basically he has a very bad habit of just going all in whenever he's playing poker or blackjack. He's just crazy in the sense that he just plays all in on the first hand. Mm. He's that kind of a guy. And he's so in so much debt. He goes to one shark, like loan sharks, the people who pay you money, but then they want a lot of it with interest. He goes to that guy, and that guy gives the advice of the century, I guess. He says a very simple thing. If you have, I don't remember the exact number, but the main idea is if you have nearly $1 million, you make it, you put it into a bank, get like in a bank which is big, which gives you 5 to 6% every month or like over the year. Just take that money, put it into a house and keep paying the house. So you have a roof over your head. And from the money, you're getting your main food. Don't drink, don't gamble, don't do anything evil. Just lead a peaceful life in the roof that you have. So that idea is that get the money that is enough to get a house on mortgage for 30, 40 years. Just put it on mortgage, stay there, and spend on the minimum basic needs like food, water, and and pay your bills. That's it. Don't go into this idea of luxury that if I have a yacht, I'll be happy or all of that. So coming from an evil guy.
I'm just telling you.
It just reminded me of that scene. So that way you'll control your life. You won't have to do a job because everything is being paid for.
Exactly.
So you don't have to get... That is the only
that
sense.
That freedom. Yeah. It's so
the freedom
beautiful.
Of saying no to anyone.
You exactly. Can, you, exactly. You even nailed with, it right
even
at
with,
where it is.
Even with a job, if all of this, you want to do a job, you love it. Someday you don't like what your manager says you to do. Just get up and go to home. Everything is paid for. You have a roof over your house. Your monthlies are paid for through that amount and that interest. So it's very interesting in that way, the idea that if you haven't seen it, just go watch the movie. It's a very good life lesson.
Look, the thing is, no magic. Like, look, I admit, like,
so
not all
the power
employers,
of saying no.
Exactly, but not all employers are abusive. It's just on this general fact of, I've been seeing this trend of, you know, when somebody specifically hires you for it's a short-term job. The way that they behave simply because they know they're going to pay you really angers me, by the way. It gets on my nerves, and I don't like it. And it makes me very aware of the power imbalance. It makes me very aware of the power imbalance. And I would rather not be on that receiving end.
Then so, just go start a business, maybe a very small business, and build something from there. So the idea, it's very correct in your mind that everyone should have some sort of control over their lives.
Yeah, we should.
And that comes through finances because then you can say no to a job, you can say no to a business partner, you can say no to everything
exactly.
in the world.
That's why I find it crazy when some people say money doesn't matter.
No, no, it does.
What do you mean money doesn't matter?
It does.
That's crazy. It does. It decides, you know, the level of control people have of you, what you can do with your life, your free time, your time. So, of course, it does.
Yeah. And the funny meme that I always quote whenever I hear this is, it's better to cry in a Mercedes than broke on the street. So, yeah, it's always better to cry with the Mercedes under you.
Now, you know what this reminds me of? I'm actually such a fan of the Kardashians. And Kim Kardashian, I remember, I don't know what episode this was in Keeping Up with the Kardashians, but she was getting a tattoo. Not her. Someone recommended to her to get a tattoo. And then Kim went like, would you put a bumper sticker on a Bentley? And I just, I always think back on that. But anyways, enough discussion. Back to the main topic. So for our first one today, Nissan and Honda are set to merge, and these discussions are going to be taking place in the next 6 months, and they plan to hopefully do it by 2026. Now, essentially what's going on is that they want to form, by merging, they want to form the world's third largest automaker, set to rival Toyota and Volkswagen, and essentially also counter the competition that's going on with Chinese markets. So, you know, we're seeing the rise of Tesla. We're seeing the rise of electrical vehicles in China. A really prime example of that is Geely. And we're seeing the rise of these hybrid cars. So, this move, it comes at such a strategic point in the century that we live in, especially with all the new cars that are being developed. Now, there is a specific point here that I need to mention. Now, if it's just Nissan and Honda, the deal is estimated to be about $54 billion, according to the Financial Times. However, if Mitsubishi, a longtime Nissan ally, participates in the talks and actually does merge with them, this merger could create a $58 billion powerhouse. Now this, what a lot of people are speculating is that Nissan is pushing for this merger because of its financial struggles after its alliance with Renault collapsed following CEO Carlos Ghosn's arrest. And in late 2023, it was actually reported that their profits plummeted by 94%, forcing a 20% production cost, 9,000 layoffs. And there's also like this rising fear that they're actually going to go bankrupt by 2026 by the time that they actually merge. This is where the story is very interesting, though. It's that it's the fact that, you know, Nissan's ally, Honda CEO's Maib, actually came to their defense. He said that, you know, he completely rejected the suggestion that this merger is in any way a part of, you know, rescuing Nissan, and that is wrong. We want to lay out the benefits we will be able to obtain from integration. This is not about saving Nissan.
Yeah.
But this is crazy. How are you feeling about it, Majid? I know that you love cars. I know that you're obsessed. I feel like all men are.
No, it's not all men. But yeah, the main idea is behind this is it's like very simple terms, KFC and McDonald's merging. It's like Pizza Hut and Domino's merging. It's so historic.
It's so crazy.
By the time it happens, like they've said that it'll happen completely by 2026. So we'll have to see how it works out. Will they call it Nissan Honda or Honda Nissan? What will be the idea behind it? So this is the main thing that I'm looking forward to. What will happen? How will the finances be divided? Who will take the major lion's share of the profit? Because we see Nissan is not doing good. And Honda is like one of the power movers in Japan.
Do you think Honda will be the parent company in this case?
Yeah, but whatever they decide at the end of the day will be the rule. But I think Honda has upper hand. Honda's cars are better, if I can say so.
Really? I love Nissan.
I have a Nissan Sunny. I love Nissan. The Sunny, and they have 2-3 cars which are really great. They're heavy cars. They're well built. They're Japanese cars, so they're very well built. The only problem for me was they don't give an AC in the back. And in UAE, you know, the market is different. You need an AC in the back, like
it's
the
so
small.
Hot.
Yeah, so there's a lot of things that work out. Their major market is US, obviously. Everything's major market is US and Europe. But in the UAE, they also have a very big market. Because I don't know if people will agree with me, but Nissan's AC is way better than a lot of other cars.
It is.
Yeah,
I agree with
so
you. That's what my car
this
is
like
car
their
is.
Pride point. When I was buying the car, I was like, why haven't you given like an AC in the back? And they were like, because the AC itself is very good. Don't worry about it. And to be honest, it happens. Even in the hottest days of summer in the UAE, if I go to the car, my wife drives, I don't. I just told you in the start, I'm trying to get a license. But as soon as we sit in the car, it's too hot. The car is too hot. We open the doors for like 2 minutes. We turn on the AC to just cool
it. But it's cold now. It's the winter.
So as soon as you turn the AC on and like, within a minute, the car is good to sit in. So it has a very powerful AC. So yeah, these things matter to the like last denominator, which is the consumer who actually drives the car. But recently we did a story,
Imagine,
I remember.
Do you know what this car here is called? This Nissan car here?
Petrol?
Yes. Petrol. Oh my God.
Nissan
landed
Petrol
exactly
is the
what
favorite
I was going to say.
For
I've noticed something in the UAE. I specifically with locals and my Emirati girlfriends, we always speak about this. Every single Emirati family I know has a Nissan Petrol. And I see it everywhere, by the way. It's all of them, all the locals, they have it. I think it's their favorite car.
It's kind of a status symbol, and it's more, to be honest here, it's a cultural symbol. That if you own a Nissan Patrol, it's like, oh, you love cars. It's a sign. Mm. And I've heard it's good for off-roading. I've never done off-roading till now. Don't have a license. But as soon as I get one, the off-roading industry is a thing in UAE. Mm. People want to go on trails and all that stuff. So these cars, big cars, are for off-roading mostly. They don't drive it on the road. They drive it in sand and all
that.
That's
why they love it so much.
Yeah, and we
so
have
it's a
safaris
part of the culture.
Here.
It's embedded right into the culture.
So this area, to be honest, this region is helping Nissan a lot because I've seen a lot of Nissan cars on the road.
I know. It's everywhere, especially this Patrol.
Altima, there's like four or five versions. There's Kicks, which is like a mini SUV kind of a thing. It gives you the feel of Patrol without the price tag. So there's a lot of things that are happening good in this region for these people, but their major markets, Europe and US, that are being affected because of petrol costs, because of people's buying power going down. Mm. So people don't want to spend a lot on petrol, so they're buying hybrid cars. And then now, because of so many EVs coming in and then availability of charging stations.
Of course.
Even in UAE, the last I remember is like, we have 150 plus charging stations now in the UAE now.
In total?
Yeah, because I go to Al Furjan area, I live there. So there is three charging stations on the small malls that they created. They're called pavilions. So the whole Discovery Garden area, they have small pavilions, small shops, like a small market. So they have three charging stations there. And you just scan the code, you get it for free.
Yeah.
So no petrol cost. You can scan the app and get the charging for free. A lot of these things help.
But you know, Majid, especially with this merger here, it's such a historical moment in history for the automotive industry in itself. It's because the competition that we're seeing that's around, I mean, Musk's Teslas, everyone that I know, by the way, has bought a Tesla.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people who I know who their cars just died out, they're like, okay, it's time for a new car. They've bought a Tesla.
Yeah.
So I them coming together, two competitors coming together, especially at a time like this, I'm truly so excited to see the cars that they're going to produce. Even recently, we saw that Jaguar, they came out with this new model. Basically, Jaguar just recently, they came out with their electrical vehicle models. However, people did not like them because they don't...
They look like dinkies to me. Like,
really? They don't... Yeah, exactly. As Majid said, they're not traditional. But it's funny, you know, that you say that because I showed my cousin the cars.
They love it.
And he's... he loved it. He said people who don't like it don't have taste. I didn't like them, to be honest with you.
My idea of... I think I come from a generation where the idea of car, the best car that my generation wanted was from Fast and Furious series, the muscle cars, the racing cars. We grew up with Fast and Furious.
Yeah.
We grew up with a lot of
car
movies.
I watched all of them, every single one of them.
So Dom Toretto driving a muscle car in the very first movie and then the other guy coming in driving sports cars, our idea was created from there. So in our formative years, we saw those cars as the cars. But it's changing, obviously. People are going into new colors, new designs. The market, to be honest, for Jaguar, I think their pivot is not going to make them suffer a lot because they will sell the cars because they're electric. So I don't think they will suffer more because of the ad that they put out, which everyone is calling woke, and the colors that they have in those cars. The cars will sell on the basis that they're electric vehicles, and the market has opened up crazily for electric vehicles.
Because oil dependency. If I buy a car, I will buy I will buy hybrid. I don't think I'll do a Tesla.
I would suggest if you're buying a hybrid, better just buy an electric vehicle because you live in Dubai, in a city which has a lot of charging stations, and one charging can get you through one day at least. So it's a very nice thing that we have in this city. The infrastructure is there for an EV car. That's the most important thing. A lot of underdeveloped countries, like the countries where these infrastructure problems are there, for example, Asia, to be honest, India is a very big market for EVs. I was just reading something about it, that India, people are buying electric cars. The only problem they're facing is they have to install charging stations at home. And then the electricity cost is building up for them. So it's better to go to a station. So India still doesn't have the infrastructure, but the EV sales are going up. Likewise, China is the all EV. To be honest, I think everyone in China now has an EV because they put the infrastructure first and then they started selling. Even recently, when you joined recently, like 2 months ago, New Year, we did a story about NIO. They came in consortium with the Abu Dhabi-based group and they launched their electric vehicles. NIO basically owns, like, the parent company of NIO.
Yeah.
They own nearly 40% of the Chinese EV market. So they're one of the biggest players and they chose Dubai as their first foreign market. Dubai and UAE, obviously. Mm. So them coming here, they know that the infrastructure is already there. Selling a car would be easy and people would buy it.
Yeah,
so yeah, a lot of things are happening around
right
it.
About that. And
there's also a technical, battery issue with electric cars because they heat up and people are scared.
Not just that, I believe it's made with, is it lithium? Basically, like if a Tesla catches on fire,
It's going to be a lithium blast actually with lithium in it.
You can't put it
off. But they're very safe. The electric vehicles, they are inbuilt with all the systems that cools down the battery. So even if their cooling system shut down, your car will stop.
No, Majid, I'm completely paranoid. No, I see a lot of stories of people being locked in. It's on fire. I don't think I want
to
take
honest,
part in that.
When the big cars came out from the smaller cars, the big petrol and all these Land Cruisers and Range Rover came, a lot of people were afraid then. So every time there is a change in sizes or models or technology behind the car, people are scared. But you listen to all the experts, EV experts, they will tell you that every electric vehicle, especially Chinese, they come so loaded with so many options that even if your battery needs conditioning, the car will stop. The car will be like, no, first go get your battery, something, get it like proper, and then we'll drive. So that's the good thing.
Yeah. And for our second topic for today, you know, we're going to answer the question of, is the UAE actually holding $40 billion in Bitcoin? So the UAE, it's rumored to have amassed $40 billion worth of Bitcoin, fueling speculation about the nation's growing role in the global cryptocurrency market. So reports align this claim with the UAE's crypto-friendly policies and initiatives like DMCC's Cryptocurrency Center. And the key case studies that are supporting this point is that the former Binance CEO, Changpeng Zhao, hinted at the UAE's increasing Bitcoin reserves in an X post, but he sourced it to a crypto news site which quoted Bitcoinist. So the original article by Bitcoinist is now removed from their site. So already we're seeing that, you know, there is a very big chance this is not true, because why would they delete the post? And the UAE saw $34 billion flow into cryptocurrencies between 2023 and mid-2024, with Bitcoin holding a 19% market share. So yes, we are definitely seeing that, you know, crypto and Bitcoin have such a huge role to play in this region. However, this is completely wrong. You know, there is no credible evidence that actually supports the $40 billion figure, and it lacks sources or official confirmation and lacking credibility overall. And imagine, like me and you are seeing this nowadays. People just claim anything on X. They claim anything. Like, for example, just yesterday, I believe it was the New York Post, they released something on Jeff Bezos, the founder of Amazon, saying that he is going to have a $600 million wedding with his fiance. And it, by the way, it caused such a big response. People were like, man, you could be helping the needy children. You could solve world hunger. You could help the Amazon employees. Like, the people were angry. And then what ended up happening is that Bezos responded on X, saying that this is completely false, and the traditional saying of don't believe everything that you read is becoming more important than ever now. And I completely agree with this, by the way. You shouldn't believe everything that you read, and you should always question it. However, you know, I can't lie to you. I do rely lately. You know whose news I've really been enjoying, Majid? The Daily Mail. They are so entertaining. They are so entertaining, especially the Daily Mail on TikTok. So basically, the Daily Mail, they have this very big like news channel on TikTok, and they always do videos on like the hottest topics. And oh my God, the links that they make, the angles that they make, like for example, I know that you're all hearing about it, Luigi Mangione, yeah. the suspected killer of the United Healthcare CEO in America.
Now he's not suspected. Now he's I did it.
Last night, he pleaded guilty.
Yeah, so now he's not the suspected killer. He is the killer, according to his own statement. So if he pleads guilty, that means...
Guilty.
Did he plead guilty or not guilty?
Wait, let us check.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure he pleaded guilty.
He's not suspected anymore. He is the killer.
Yeah, he pleads not guilty.
Oh, not guilty.
Yeah,
then he's still the suspected.
Guilty.
Yeah.
So he is still suspected. However, yeah. You know what I, what's it called with all these cases, like for example, you know what the Daily Mail did? They went on to make like a post saying, oh, the lawyer that was hired for him, her husband is also working as the lawyer for Diddy, because you know we are seeing all of the. The cases that Diddy is facing right now in the music industry, and essentially the lawyer for Luigi Mangione, her husband, is defending Diddy. And it's so interesting, the links that they always love to draw. I love the angles that they create. They cause drama. I love them. They're really good.
No, Daily Mail, they're the experts in clickbait, to be honest.
It's entertaining. Listen,
I don't
it makes
love
me stop
them.
And read.
I don't love them. But the clickbait industry, like the level that they have taken clickbait to, it's a guilty pleasure reading them.
It's not even like I want to read it.
It's a guilty pleasure.
Even like recently, we're hearing how Blake Lively, the famous movie star who is also the wife of Ryan Reynolds, also a very famous movie star, she has accused her co-star from It Ends With Us, Justin Baldoni, of, I believe it was sexual harassment on the set of It Ends With Us. And Majid, you know why this is so interesting? Did you see the hate that was targeted towards her when the movie came out?
Oh, yeah.
The internet rose against her. So to see that she's responding back like this, however, I am still suspicious. I don't completely stand with her. I don't completely stand with him, but I don't completely trust her either, because I saw her videos with other interviewers. I saw her videos with other interviewers, and she reportedly worked with Woody Allen. And so it's interesting to see what's going on here. And apparently Justin Baldoni's, his agency actually dropped him at the time where this lawsuit came out, but his agency also has Blake and Ryan in it.
Oh.
So what's a better choice? Two movie stars or one?
You're reading too much Daily Mail.
making
connections.
Not even reading too much Daily Mail. I'm just really in on the drama and because America, we do always hear everything that's going on. And that brings us to our last topic for today, which has a really huge link to America. So there is a US-based investment company, and it's known as Affinity Partners, and it's led by Jared Kushner. Now, Jared Kushner is the son-in-law of Donald Trump, and his company, Affinity Partners, has just secured $1.5 billion from Qatar Investment Authority and Lunate. And what this here does is that, number one, you have to know that this new capital from the Qatar Investment Authority is actually an Abu Dhabi-based alternative investment fund. So there are a lot of cities that are linked here in countries. Now, this injection boosts Affinity's assets under management to $4.6 billion. Affinity has invested in prominent firms like Dubai's Dubizzle Group and Brazil's Zamps SA, and the firm claims a robust deal pipeline ahead. However, there is something really, really interesting in the story that Majid was telling me before. Do you want to tell them about it?
Oh, yeah. He came onto a podcast, and he said that these deals started in Feb. They happened, like, were finalized before Trump's election recently. So his idea is that no one made deals with me and Affinity Partners because Trump was getting elected. They just made the deals, and I made pretty clear to them that even if Trump wins, my like father-in-law wins, I will not be like giving you any favors. So basically he's talking about the business ethics, that even with my father-in-law as president, I will not be helping you with any other deals. If you're investing in me, in Affinity Partners, you're investing in me and Affinity Partners.
You're not investing
not
in
investing
Trump.
In the idea that I have the ear of the next president of the U.S. So that was the interesting part about this story.
But in a sense, though, I see what people do.
There will be.
I see. I mean, to be honest with you, I wouldn't be complaining if I had a connection like that. I'd use it to my advantage.
Why
you know?
Not? Whatever, everyone does.
Exactly. Like, whatever you got, what you got, and then the day, you got it, right? Well, how you reach that point, obviously, ethically, it does matter. But I don't know. I wouldn't be complaining. And he does have the ear of Trump. I mean, he's married to his daughter. So, but I understand what he means, though. Sometimes in society, you do want to distinguish yourself. You do want to stand out for your own achievements. And in his case, if you take a look at it, Majid, he's a man. You know, he's a man with a family. He has children. And it's like, you want your children to look up to you. You want your wife to look up to you and to look up to all the achievements that you're making for them. So I do feel that Donald Trump, while he is what he is, he may constantly overshadow the achievements of his family.
Yeah.
Probably. Yeah. But it's not the worst thing in the world.
Yeah. See, anyone making money on the basis of their own skill is good. When I was doing this story, I was Googling him and certain headlines came. And a lot of people call him by the name, I forgot completely, I just read it. But he's the mechanic. So apparently he is considered the best communication person right now in the industry. So the reason he's making deals, maybe someone is thinking that he's Trump's son-in-law and he has his ear. But most probably he's doing it on the basis of his own skills. So him getting the title of the mechanic right now, shows that he is doing it on it. And him clearly laying out that, sorry, no favors, that's a good sign. The interesting thing is that QIA, Qatar Investment Authority, Lunate, which is a very new company, it's not an old company, it was recently formed this year.
Where is it based, Majid?
In Abu Dhabi. So they're an alt investment firm. We did a story like 3 or 4 months ago on them. They got a $1 billion deal. No, sorry, they got a $100 billion deal with something. And I was surprised by it. I remember Jitex was happening. And me, Rich, and Bilal, we were coming back from Jitex. And me and Rich had a chat about it. He said that there's so many companies in the UAE. You just hear their name out of nowhere. And then when you go deep, you realize they're billion-dollar companies.
And they've been there for a while.
And no one knows them. They're doing business, they're into billions of dollars, but no one knows them. So there's such a big market that the big players are already there.
I think that's intentional, though, Majid.
No, it's not intentional. It's just that there are big players, obviously. There's the sovereign wealth funds, which are the richest funds in the world right now. But
no,
everything gets buried or
it's
hidden under it.
It's buried by purpose. Because I always have this conversation with, you know, a lot of my Emirati friends who have their own businesses and they don't reveal how much their business, they tell me what their businesses are worth, but all of that, you can't find that online. Like even when you take a look at their founder portfolios in which the Khalij Times, Vogue Arabia have written about them, they never include the numbers. They never include them. And I do think it has to do with the culture that we're a part of, the culture that I'm a part of. Like even in my culture, our Arabic culture, because, you know, Sudanese people do speak Arabic, privacy is so important. And numbers, you know, displaying your numbers, that's not being private whatsoever. But, so I do think if it's homegrown brands, I do think it's an intentional decision on their part.
It's intentional, but to be honest, now in the recent time, see, if ADIA, the Abu Dhabi Investment Authority, they don't tell people that they're a $1 trillion fund. No, I'm
not
just talking about
everyone
now. You need to be in the news. You need to be out there telling people that we are here, we do this. So, yeah, I remember now, the company is a subsidiary of Chimera Investment, which is a private investment firm in Abu Dhabi, in ADGM. So we did that story like 4 months ago, and Chimera introduced this idea. So Chimera is an investment firm. This they created as an alternative investment firm. So there's alternate choices of investment, like new ideas coming up, like upcoming industries, upcoming for example, if you invest in real estate, that's like normal investing. But if you invest in real estate in a market or like in a product which is new, like a branded residence, they are considered still alternate because I guess UAE only has 10 or 12 till now. America has 150 or 200 plus branded residences. So that is the idea of alt investment, and otherwise crypto and all the other things that you can invest in. But so yeah, it came into being from Chimera. Chimera is a known brand. I was missing that link. So they are not known, but they want to be known. That's the good part. So we have 2 minutes. So yeah, they want to be known. Okay, that's the good part.
It's good to be known, but like, okay, for example, I'll give you an example. I have two friends and they both have their own businesses and they're both doing really amazing. And they tell me that the kind of clients that they work with, and they're very highly esteemed clients, really exclusive clients. And I'm like, how come you don't reveal that? I'm like, excuse me. Like, if you tell the people that, more people will buy from you. And then they proceed to tell me that our clients themselves actually love working with us due to the fact that we're exclusive.
Yeah.
We don't reveal that they're working with us. And so I do think that there is a lot in play here. Certain businesses, they like to announce their profits. They like to celebrate their growth with their audience. But not everyone is like that. And I do think that if I had my own business, I would not be announcing any growth or anything, Majid.
No, it would be very... See, private companies who are not listed, they don't have to. They're not forced to. But sometimes they do, actually, because they want to show that they're very transparent and they're very good.
Yeah.
So they publish the CSR initiatives. They'll tell their overall revenue. They'll never tell the profit. They'll never tell the profit, but they'll tell the revenue. So revenue is like profit, loss, all of it included, the money that they made. So private firms who are very open, they're global, they are very open. But yeah, some of the private firms actually don't go for listing because they don't want to tell people how much they're earning.
Yeah.
Because if you become a public traded company, you have to list everything
out. You
immediately
lose all your privacy.
Yeah, but you get a lot of money from an IPO. So that's also an additional advantage.
Thank you so much for watching, everyone. Have a lovely, lovely holiday today. Enjoy today and enjoy tomorrow. Happy Christmas to you all. Thank you so much for watching. This is Smashy Business Show, a Smashy Business production under the Augustus Media Podcast Network. You can find our newsletter on Smashy TV, and you can also find us on X, Instagram, YouTube, and LinkedIn. Have a lovely day.